This is PS You're Wrong, the podcast where we talk trash about the things people love to hate and hate to love. And we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
And we have yet to have a schism that has required us to break up and then one of us to leave a very shady TikTok.
Which one of us would be Alex?
I think you'd probably be Alex and I would also be Alex.
Yeah. I'm glad this up. I'm surprised you brought it up because I feel like I've only been on the periphery of this story.
Yes.
But do you understand it more?
A little bit, I think. So we're talking about Alex Earl and Alex Cooper, aka call her daddy.
Yeah.
Who are in a bit of seemingly a feud.
Yeah.
From what I understand, and again, I'm not really in the Call Her Daddy or the Alex Earl space.
Right.
I only know Alex Cooper because I feel like Call Her Daddy has become such a mainstream
thing.
It's like you can't really not know her anymore.
Like second to us. Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
Yes. We'll have to go back and consult that one list of like best pop culture podcasts that have us at like number five for some reason.
Yeah.
Alex Earl, I understand less of as a person because she's just sort of like an influencer, and aside from her being on Dancing with the Stars, which I like sort of watched clips of, I don't really
We talked a little bit about this during Dancing with the Stars, where I was like, oh, she has beef with Alex Cooper, but then I couldn't tell you why.
So it has to do with Alex Earl's former podcast. So apparently Alex Cooper, obviously Call Her Daddy, that's like a big deal. And she has a podcast network called Unwell, or maybe that's just her like brand in general, because I think that also her dream.
That's the network she started.
Right. But isn't her like soda or whatever it is also called Unwell? I feel like
Corporate synergy.
Energy drink or a protein shake or whatever, something or other that she has.
Probably.
So Alex Earl's podcast was on Alex Cooper's podcast network, and I guess there was some sort of behind the scenes drama because all of a sudden Alex Earl's podcast was not on that network anymore, and I don't think she has a podcast anymore.
I thought she was going to start one. She was the big get for Alex Cooper, and it was like OMG besties have their own podcast,
and then she never started it.
Oh, but I could be wrong.
I could also be wrong.
Alex Cooper podcast. I mean, Alex Earl podcast.
Alex Earl podcast. We'll investigate.
Okay. Anyway, okay. Yeah. Yes. She did have one.
Okay. That's what I thought. She did have one and then it got canceled. And I don't think he's relocated it anywhere.
Correct.
Maybe.
Yeah. It was hot mess.
Yeah. And I sort of don't. I mean, the celebrity podcast, that's a whole, or influencer podcast, I guess, that's a whole other thing we can talk about. Just because I feel like there was a podcast boom back in, I don't know, like 2016, 2017, where every celebrity decided to start a podcast. And I feel like people quickly realized that it's more work and more annoying than you think it would be. And so a lot of those stopped. But then I feel like in the last couple of years, we've had a resurgence of these podcasts, which are now almost like a video talk show rather than a podcast. It's almost like an extended version of like Oprah, but it's just on a podcast and there's like a YouTube video now, to the point where Oprah now has a podcast that's also a video podcast. So it's basically just like her show, but not anymore because it's a podcast. Anyways, there's all these different networks and things. It's sort of confusing to me. But Alex Earl and Alex Cooper apparently had some sort of falling out. And I think it kind of is a little bit similar to the Taylor Swift, Olivia Rodrigo thing, where it was like they were really good friends and were always talking about each other and posting about each other. And then all of a sudden it kind of all stopped and everyone was like, wait a second, like what happened here? But there really wasn't a lot of addressing of it.
Right.
And I guess in the last couple of months, however long, Alex Earl has been liking some Instagram posts, commenting on some things that were anti-Alex Cooper. And Alex Cooper has had enough of that. And so she posted a TikTok video last week that was just her talking to the camera saying like, hey, girl, I don't usually get on here and air out the drama, but you've been, you know, liking things and commenting about things. And if you're going to be shady, like, just say your problem with me out loud so that we can hash it out and whatever. Like, you don't have an NDA. We both know what happened. If you've got an issue, say it. To which Alex Earl then commented, okay, on it.
Yeah.
To the TikTok. And we are yet to get a response from Alex Earl or really any details from Alex Cooper either. So we're in a bit of a standstill.
Well, Alex Earl did post today saying, sorry, I've been busy filming this week.
Right. Yes, she posted that. And she also posted a video of her friends showing her the Alex Cooper TikTok, like waking her up in bed and being like, here's this TikTok, like, isn't
it's
this crazy?
So I think it's all like not staged in the fact that they're both in on it, but more it's just like, it's not that deep, I bet, and it's not gonna be worth it in the end. So it's like they might as well enjoy this push for stories. And I think it's also like helpful, I mean, for both of their brands, probably, but definitely Alex Earl, who had a huge following after Dancing with the Stars. Like, that was a big positive push for her. And so now it's sort of like, I don't know, the influencer bubble is like bursting and they have to get more creative in keeping attention. And I'm curious to see what they do with this, because I saw some other like influencer adjacent people talk about what this beef could be. And it seems to go back to like when she, I think it's just like a personality clash. Like, I don't think it was anything nefarious or like a true gotcha on either part. So I'm sort of like, I don't know if they're just going to keep on like talking about it, but never actually talk about it. Or maybe Alex Earl will end up on Call Her Daddy and interview herself.
There was a lot of speculation. She's going to take herself to the red table.
Yeah.
There was a lot of speculation that last week's podcast guest on Call Her Daddy was going to be Alex Earl. And that this was
really
sort of the ease of it. But then I can't remember who was on Call Her Daddy, but it was someone else. So that it doesn't appear to be promo for that. But the reports, based on sources, so who knows what that means, said that the conflict was like ego driven.
Yeah.
So I kind of wonder if it wasn't like a money type thing.
Yeah.
Alex Cooper wanted X amount of money. Alex Earl was like, no, I'm the bigger draw. Like, I shouldn't have to give you as much, you know, that kind of thing. I do think that the influencer space is very fascinating.
Yeah.
Right now, because, sort of like you said, there's just so many influencers. And I feel like we've gotten different kinds of influencers over the years. There was obviously that first wave of YouTubers way back in, I don't even know, like 2008, 2010, like around then. Then we got the Instagram, like photo influencers and the Vine stars. Now we've got the TikTokers. And it does feel like you, as an influencer, only have a certain like window of time to try to like break out of just being an influencer into being something else. And if that window passes for you, then you're kind of stuck. Because like all of those like photo fashion-y influencers from back in like 2016, 2017, like what are those people doing today? You know what I mean? Like, if they're not video people, are they still just like posting pictures of them in hats? Like, I don't know.
Cause it used to be that you're just, you're not a personality. You're just a vibe. And so I think they still exist. Like, there's a lot of travel influencers who have their travel influencing things, but becoming like a personality who's then doing red carpets and who has a energy drink line and all of that, I think it's harder and harder to pull off.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, there's something about being an influencer that people inherently don't like.
Yeah.
There's something that feels just like a little too thirsty. And I think being an influencer is actually a lot harder than it seems. But when you're watching it online, it's like, oh, these people are just like posting videos and they're lame and they're annoying and they really have no talent other than just like talking to the camera or being hot or whatever. But yeah, it's like, what is Alex Earl's sort of talent other than being attractive? I guess she did well on Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah, I don't know.
It is kind of like, okay.
My favorite part of the story is the Dakota Johnson fits into it. Because she's great at predicting or preceding downfalls and fallouts and stuff. Because when she did her, what is it, Vanity Fair lie detector
test, yes.
She was shown pictures of the two and was asked, do you know who these are? Because she's like, I'm so offline. And she's like, no, I don't know. Aren't they the same person? Isn't this the same picture? Wait, are they two different? They're both named Alex. And she's like clearly confused. And she's like, is there beef? Do they have beef? Is it about their podcasts? And yeah, I mean, it is. And it's funny. It's funny that she's just hovering over these social fallouts that keep coming.
Dakota Johnson, I love so much as a celebrity. She's and I also like her as an actor. I'm not sure she's a great actor always, but she can be utilized well by people if they know what to do with her. But I think that she is just like has such a good read on the vibes of any situation. It does sort of seem like a superpower of hers. Like, she's not going to get involved. She doesn't care. She's above whatever is going on. But she can, like, tell where there's problems without really even having to, like, poke her finger around in it too much. And that's a talent. Like, the Ellen stuff, so funny. So funny. I did invite you, Ellen.
I know. Iconic.
Dakota.
But Taylor Swift.
Wait, does Dakota Johnson and Taylor Swift have something?
No, they're like friends. So I'm saying, what does that say to you?
Are they?
I think generally they've been seen together, and Taylor Swift just did Dakota Johnson's like summary for the Times 100 influential people.
Interesting.
She wrote like the little blurb about her and was like, the thing that's great about Dakota is she seems like someone who could never lie. And so you just like believe she's just a truth teller type thing.
I do. That duo is fascinating to me because I do feel like they're sort of like they are sort of polar opposites of each other. So I can see how they would kind of mesh just because it feels like Dakota Johnson truly does not care. She will do whatever she wants. And Taylor Swift, like, no one has ever cared more, but she is trying to seem like she doesn't care. Yeah. So there is a weird, like, two sides of the same coin with the two of them, I think, in an interesting way.
Yeah. So maybe she just wants to be close to the drama. That's inevitable. Did you hear about Taylor Swift's current wedding rumors?
I heard something about this, but now I can't remember what it was. What is it?
July 4th, New York.
New York City?
I don't think that was clarified. I bet it would be somewhere more like upstate-ish.
I'm like, you know, I can't imagine her getting married in New York. Like, that would be crazy.
July 4th is kind of like a delicious idea because of like Tamerica and all the all the drama she's had on 4th of July events. But I also would not be surprised if this is all a lie because it's like, you know, a source says. But then the source also said that each invite had a specific watermark with the couple, like the receiver's name on it, so that if it were to leak, Taylor would know who leaked, or the couple would know who leaked it. And I think that is so funny.
I mean, 4th of July this year is on a Saturday, so that mm-hmm. does make sense. We mm-hmm. do obviously know that the wedding is coming up at some yeah. point. And it's like, I think that...
And it has to be summer because of his games, whatever. Right.
Yes, that makes sense as well. Sports. Yeah. Yeah. And I do... It is like... It makes sense that rumors about this would be going around before... any sort of like official information comes out right. just based on the number of people involved. Like there's so many people who are going to be invited to the wedding, but also people like vendors and planners,
yeah.
and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So, and presuming that it's a big production, you know, that makes sense. And also not only people who are end up going to do the wedding, but also people who are just sort of like in the market for doing the wedding. Like I imagine mm-hmm. she's touring venues or she's, you know, looking yeah. at floral arrangements or whatever. So I don't think that this seems like plausible to
plausible
me.
Yeah.
I would be shocked though if she didn't get married in some place that's a little bit more far flung.
What do you mean?
Because, like, I think she'd want some privacy and she'd want a lot of space.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah.
Like, yeah. I don't think that she would get married in New York because I just don't. I mean, unless she was like, oh, I'm getting married, like, in the public library or, like, the
yeah.
Met or something, which I Amazing. Guess she could.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It doesn't seem like she has that much of a attachment to New York.
Right.
Well, despite her one song.
Well. I mean, one song. There's like Cornelia Street. That's New York.
I guess, but that's about how she was in love with a woman.
No, no, no. The New York, the... Which one is about Carly?
They're all about Carly. Every song she's ever written is about every song. Wait, what was that?
Where did Carly Kloss get married? Maybe that's, she'll retrace.
That's a great question. To the Kushners. Steps.
Yeah.
To Mr. Kushner.
Yeah.
They might have gotten married in New York. I can't remember. But yeah, it would make more sense for her to get married up in Rhode Island if she was going to get married in one of her houses. I guess she could get married somewhere like in the Catskills or something, but that does sort of seem very random.
I mean, people get married in New York all the time, like rich, you know, like succession style. People, right? There's right. got to be a venue yes. that's like big
on
private,
the Statue of Liberty Island or wherever it was that he got married after the boat.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Lady Liberty will be in all the photos.
Yeah, I just feel like Taylor Swift is such like a nature-y person, like not really necessarily, but she has so many albums that are kind of about yeah. like.
Cottage core. Yeah.
Right. She's not like cosmopolitan.
Yeah.
Like there's certain
but all the pap walks.
Yeah. Like if you thought, well, yes, and I know God knows she wants that. But
yeah.
Like Charlie XCX getting married at that courthouse in Hackney, like makes total yeah. sense for yeah. her because she's like a city dweller. If she yeah, had gotten yeah. married at some like bohemian wooded area, it would have been weird.
Yeah.
But I feel like I could see, you know, Taylor like walking through the woods, you know, like her dress like in the mm-hmm, dirt kind mm-hmm. of a vibe.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll have to see. We'll have to see July 4th.
July 4th.
Mark your calendar.
Is there what else we need to talk about? Did we talk about the summer house drama? I feel like we did, but I don't know if we're too late on that.
We're too late and I'm
okay.
too far removed. Okay. But I did see White Lotus is filming at Cannes.
Yes.
So it'll be set not only, we knew it was in the French Riviera, but now it's going to be set during the Cannes Film Festival, which will be fun.
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah.
I think so, we needed something that was a little bit where there needed to be an event involved. We've had three seasons where it's just like people on vacation. And I think there needed to be a sense of occasion to sort of like break up the season. And I also think that Cannes works really well because it gives an arc to it, you know, like there's these parties and premieres and things where you can sort of build up to something. I don't know if it's going to be something where where all of the characters are involved in Can, or it's like some of the people at the resort are doing stuff with Can and some people aren't. But
I know. Will anyone be playing themselves, do you think?
Well, let's see. Who is in the cast? White Lotus season.
Helena Bonham Carter.
Helena Bonham Carter.
I guess there's a lot of like small time, you know, TV actors.
Yeah, I'm like Sandra Bernhard, Vincent Cassell, Steve Coogan, Heather Graham, Ari Grainer. Like, these are people who I guess theoretically could be playing themselves at Cannes. Rosie Perez. But I sort of feel like that this is a...
Yeah.
That no. The oh, Kumail yeah. Nanjiani's in this season?
Yeah.
No, I think these people are playing fictional characters.
Yeah, I guess you wouldn't want to be like the studio too much, you know?
Right.
You don't want it to be about Hollywood.
I also think that there are a number of like hot younger people who I don't know as well, and that makes more sense. Like Charlie Hall is in the season. He is Julia Louis-Dreyfus's son. And it's like, oh yeah, you could see him playing like the lead of some movie that's going to be
right. Yeah.
Whereas,
no, I'm excited. I think it'll be fun. And they're going to be filming, the rumor is, like on the carpet the second week. So there will be some crossover there. Cute. Fun.
I wonder how much they had to like pay and negotiate to do that.
I mean, in some ways, yeah, I don't know. It's like F1 filming during F1 races.
Well, it's and
you get there a little early.
And the studio filmed at Venice, although not during the Venice Film Festival, but there have been, you know, shots of them filming at Venice as if the studio team is, you know, has some movie or another that's Venice. Which that I can't wait. I love the first season of the studio.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, did you like Coachella second week?
I really didn't pay attention to Coachella the second week.
Oh, Billie Eilish. Billie Eilish was named One Less Lonely Girl. Cute.
And Madonna was there with Sabrina.
No one
Carpenter.
Liked her. No, the audience was just like dead during her performance because they're children who have no respect for their elders.
I did see a TikTok of Tinks asking people like, do you know who Madonna is? Can you name Madonna signs? Which, a rough go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I remember being in high school and the Janet Jackson incident happened. And then for all of those years directly following, the Super Bowl had like old male singers, I think, because they were worried about like any sort of issue. So it was like, oh, let's get Bruce Springsteen, let's get Tom Petty, let's get Paul McCartney. And I remember just being like, ugh, like this is so boring. Who are these people? I've never heard of them. I don't know these songs. And then as I got older, it's like, okay, now I know more Bruce Springsteen songs, just like being alive in the world. So I think I have like a slight more reverence for him, but it is hard when you're...
Miss Madonna. It's like a pop.
But like, what was the last big...
It'd be
Madonna
like Michael
pop?
Jackson coming out during a Kelly Clarkson concert. But I'm saying like in our era, that's like how... That's like the timeline.
I guess...
It's like Madonna was the 80s, so it's like.
But Michael Jackson was
I guess,
Michael Jackson had a longer
okay, so
run
it would be
Madonna.
Like, I don't know. I don't know music enough.
I do think that Madonna has not had a hit song within a lot of these people's lifetimes.
I know.
And that is part of the problem because she.
So,
really
do you
was big,
think
like,
Sabrina Carpenter shouldn't have brought her out? Like,
no,
do you
think
Sabrina Carpenter read the room wrong?
No, because I think like you're doing Coachella partly for the people in the room, but you're doing Coachella partly for people online.
Yeah,
and like people online are getting it and are gagged by it and are excited that she has a new album coming out. At least gay people who I follow.
Yeah.
The whole situation.
Yeah.
But I do think, I don't want to be one of those people who's like, you don't know Madonna. Like, what?
Yeah.
Because
you don't
I've been
blame
yelled
the
at
youth.
By enough people for not knowing, like, you don't know this Elvis Presley song. It's like, how would I know this? Why would I know this? This was not popular during my lifetime.
Yeah. Like, but funny that they were all still back, like taking pictures. You know what I mean?
Oh,
like, I think that that's like the cultural, that's the moment. Yeah. It's just interesting watching the concerts and seeing everyone like go quiet, but not put their phones down.
Coachella is so interesting, not because it's a music festival. The music's kind of whatever. I mean, every now and again, you get like Beychella or something big that's monumental. But so often, Coachella is just fascinating in that it's a way to observe culture. And especially now that all of these influencers are going there and all of the who's friends with who and who's in which entourage at these events. Kendall Jenner is there to watch Justin Bieber, like that kind of a thing. There's a lot of interest. Who are they bringing out on stage? Who gets asked? Who doesn't get asked? Who's in which tents, in which time slot? Like, that's all really interesting to me. Because, like, the Strokes were one of the headliners.
Oh, my God. Yes. Like, iconic.
I like the Strokes, but, like, I feel like I saw zero content about the Strokes.
No, zero. But they were, like, right before Bieber on the same stage, so they had a huge audience, and they used it to, like, do the most politically charged, like, set. Like, they had an entire montage that was just calling out the U.S. on their military, interference. And, like, just montages of them in the bombings of Palestine and now Iran. And it was just, like, iconic. And he made some sort of comment, too, that was, like, I thought about just, like, playing YouTube videos of Iran for you guys, but figured you'd already seen that, you know, referencing Bieber's production last week. So they used their platform well, even though nobody cared. And maybe it made a difference.
I am really interested in the demographic of people going to Coachella, because obviously the version of Coachella that we see online is a lot of like 24-year-olds who have like dragged themselves from Los Angeles and are now like parading around. But I do wonder if the actual like ticket buying audience of Coachella isn't much older and more musically inclined, because the musicians that they have at Coachella do usually include some older skewing people. Like the Strokes are, that's a generation before us even. Like that's like early millennials, late Gen X people who would have been really into the Strokes. And like, wasn't Green Day, like, didn't they perform there recently? I don't know. I don't know. Coachella. It's
Coachella.
Wild.
Yeah. Never catch me there, but.
Oh, no. Truly. It seems like hell. You watch these videos of like, of influencers who you know have gotten like, they have the VIP bracelet, they have the whatever, like they're getting the special treatment, and it's like they're walking for 9,000 miles and they're stuck in traffic and whatever, because this town is not
hot,
it's
dusty. Only porta potties, no one wants to be there.
You see like the this year there were these sandstorms and sort of like blowing over the tents and stuff that people had set up. I do think that camping, and this tells you how bad Coachella is, that the camping seems like a positive alternative, because at least you're still there and you can just like walk to things rather than having to like schlep in and out of the city every day. Because like Kylie Jenner has a house in Palm Springs. A lot of the Kardashians have houses in Palm Springs. So for Coachella, they just stay at these mansions that they have. But then you have to get from the mansion to Coachella, and it's not like there's a VIP Kardashian only lane on the highway. Like you're stuck there with everyone else.
So true. So true.
Misery. Misery.
Well, should we do our love it or hate it?
Yes. Yes, 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 yes. Okay. Would you like to go first?
Oh, I'd love to. I'm here to talk about the rise and fall of Reggie Jenkins.
Oh, you know, I keep hearing about this and I'm like, no, I can't.
No, it was actually so funny. And I too had been resistant. It's Tracy Morgan and Daniel Radcliffe in this comedy on Peacock that's about a disgraced former NFL player, Tracy, who a disgraced former Oscar winner documentarian, Daniel Radcliffe, is now following to try and find a life story about some sort of comeback they're trying to make happen. And they just kind of get enmeshed in each other's lives and problems. And it's very silly. And it's a big ensemble of like very silly people. But it is like fun. It's funny. It's like laugh out loud funny. Not like, oh, funny, but like laugh out loud. And it was a fun time. And it made me appreciate what Peacock has been doing, because I also watched the cheerleader show they had earlier this year.
Uh-huh.
Stumble. And that too was funny. Reggie Dinkins is definitely better and has like found it's like a sharper writing and like a funner characters. So they're having a good time. I just think they need to promote things better, because this show had 10 episodes. We just started it like last week. So we were like, we hadn't really heard anyone talk about it, but it does have like 100% on Rotten Tomatoes, I think, with critics. And it's like so fun and fast, and it's really easy. You know, it's 10 episodes. It's not bad. I feel like Peacock needs to really be better at one, marketing these shows, and then two, making sure that they come out like regularly. Like you don't have 2-year gaps between seasons, because I think that's the only way to like keep and build momentum. But so it was a lot of fun.
Actually, is an NBC show. This is not a Peacock original. It came out on NBC and then was on Peacock, but it's not actually like a Peacock original show, which I think
I'm not like on cable anymore.
But I do think Peacock has good stuff. I think Peacock is a really good streamer to have, because it has a lot of back catalog, and it has Bravo and some of that kind of stuff, which is worth watching. Did you ever watch Killing It, the show about the Python hunters in
I watched part
Florida,
of it, which was
that
fun.
Was also really funny, and that was on Peacock. Peacock has some good things. I think
so this was a network show, but it was only 10 episodes.
It was like a mid-season pickup. It premiered on January 18th on NBC and ran for 10 episodes, so the finale was April 13th, so maybe they just moved it onto Peacock sort of to
promote interesting.
It there, I'm not sure, but it probably, I guess, moved weekly over there. Yeah, I think that the Peacock and Paramount, I guess, really are the two main streaming platforms that seem to be having like issues picking up audience members, which I find interesting, because they also have such good back catalogs and so many strong TV shows already. HBO is obviously like the one to beat, because it has a back catalog but also has new stuff that's coming out, and because of HBO's like prestigiousness, people will watch HBO shows even if they don't know what they're about, just because they're on HBO, where Paramount Plus and Peacock don't have that. But I think what they need to do is just like really get something that's really, really good, and then just promote the crap out of it.
Because, I know.
Like, Apple, who obviously has more money, they have so much stuff that they don't promote at all. But then when there is something good, like a Ted Lasso or whatever, like, they will really put a ton of effort into that to make sure that people know about it. And I don't know if I could name a single show that Peacock or Paramount Plus have had that have been really, really good and also hits.
Yeah. Unfortunate, but yeah, true. Mm. Yeah.
Well, My Love It, also a comedy currently on air, is Hacks, the final season, is back. Mm-hmm. Have you watched Hacks? Are you a Hacks fan?
I've watched all of Hacks. I haven't started this season, though.
Okay. Last season, I thought, ended in kind of a weird way.
Yeah.
This season's the final season, and I don't know what it is, but it is really hitting, and it is really funny this time. Yeah. Like, I have been laughing out loud as well watching this. I think that they've sort of upgraded Meg Stalter into a more main character, so she's doing more, and her and Paul W. Downs, like, chemistry is so good. And then you throw in Gabby Windy's wife, and that
Robbie
also
Hoffman.
Robbie Hoffman, like, that trio is a lot of fun. And the first episode, is Jean Smart being like, oh, I need to get an EGOT, and trying to figure out how to game like the EGOT system, which I think is such a funny episode. And then the second one, she has to go to like a Comic-Con type convention thing. So I think they've got a lot of fun premises sort of lined up for this final season. I hope that they end it really well. But they've said from the beginning that they knew how it was going to end. And a lot of shows obviously do not have that going for it. And I think the fact that they decided to end it after five seasons, I have trust that it's going to end well. And I really liked it so far. So
I've heard good things.
Yes. Well, next episode on Thursday, we were originally going to cover Mother Mary. However, Mother Mary apparently only played at 5 movie theaters this past week in a very strange rollout structure. So we are going back a week to discuss Yumi in Tuscany, which we already talked about a little bit, but we're going to talk about it in more detail.
Not really. So I didn't see it last week. Yeah.
Pretend that we never said anything about it and that it's all new and we're going to chat about it now.
Perfect.
So thanks everyone for listening, and we'll be back on Thursday. Bye.